Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Endocrinology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on the role of GLP-1 RAs in the management of type 2 diabetes. Specialists in the MDT involved in caring for patients with T2D, plus a patient advocate, share their perspectives on the rationale for using GLP-1 as a therapeutic target in T2D, the safety of GLP-1 RAs and how to manage their side effects, and the role of GLP-1 RAs in the T2D management pathway. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk AS. In this podcast, a primary care physician and an endocrinologist with expertise in diabetes care review the rationale for using GLP-1 as a therapeutic target in type 2 diabetes and provide an overview of available and pipeline GLP-1 RA-based therapies.
Hello, my name is Kevin Fernando. I'm a GP partner and GP educational supervisor at North Berwick Health Centre, just east of Edinburgh in Scotland. And I'm delighted today to be joined by Professor Michael Nowak, who's head of clinical research at the Diabetes Division at St. Joseph Hospital in Bochum, Germany. Welcome, Professor Nowak.
My pleasure, Kevin.
So in this section, we're going to be discussing the question, GLP-1 receptor agonists. How do they work and what is the evidence supporting their use? So Professor Nowak, for a number of years, we've been using therapies for our patients living with type 2 diabetes that reduce glucose, but unfortunately had adverse effects such as weight gain or a high risk of hypoglycemia. So it was great to have the GLP-1 receptor agonist class as a new tool in our toolbox to help support our patients living with type 2 diabetes. Potent glucose-lowering drugs with secondary benefits of weight reduction too. And of course, it was Ralph DeFronzo who first coined the ominous octet, those eight pathophysiological abnormalities underpinning a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. And it appears, Professor Nowak, that the GLP-1 receptor class directly tackles four or five of these pathophysiological abnormalities, which makes it a very attractive choice of therapy. What's your view on that?
Well, it is a very attractive choice for patients with type 2 diabetes, and for the following reasons. So one thing is that you can very potently stimulate insulin secretion, but that only works as long as there is a given degree of hyperglycemia. So the stimulation of beta cells to release insulin absolutely depends on the ambient glucose concentration. So if that is anywhere below a normal fasting glucose concentration, it will be shut off totally. So you can have a very potent stimulation of insulin secretion, but still you don't have a risk of hypoglycemia. That is one thing. In addition, there is a suppression of glucagon. There is interaction with certain brain areas, namely the hypothalamus, where appetite, satiety, food intake is regulated. And it is not the nausea that we might want to talk about later on. It is really something that stops people having appetite, wanting to eat large meals. And the consequence, obviously, is that the patients have a realistic chance to lose weight just by injecting a GLP-1 receptor agonist.
Great. So GLP-1s, thanks for that overview. GLP-1s, of course, are part of our incretin hormones. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about the incretin effect and how GLP-1 specifically exerts its action?
Yeah, so the incretin hormones are gut hormones. They are produced in certain specialized cells in the mucosa of the small intestine, and they are released whenever we eat nutrients like carbohydrates, fat in particular. That means in the fasting state, they have a very low concentration. But after a meal, they are stimulated several fold. And we know that these concentrations are sufficient to talk to the endocrine pancreas and make it release insulin. And the incretin effect is a physiological phenomenon that explains why oral glucose elicits a much larger insulin secretory response as compared to intravenous glucose, even when they reach the same glucose concentrations. And that is because these additional gut factors stimulate insulin secretion so much more. And when you take the total insulin response to an oral glucose load or a mixed meal, we estimate that about two-thirds of the amount of insulin released in response to that nutrient intake is due to the action of incretin hormones. In physiology, GLP-1 has a rather minor role in the concert of incretin hormones. GIP is much more important, but GIP doesn't work in patients with type 2 diabetes. And so GLP-1 is the only incretin hormone that taken as such has a therapeutic potential.
Great, good stuff. So a very attractive, as we've both agreed, a choice of therapy for people living with type 2 diabetes. Could you give us a little bit more detail about the glucose-lowering effects of GLP-1? How would you class the potency of the GLP-1 class? What sort of HbA1c reductions would one expect with a typical GLP-1 receptor agonist?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We meanwhile have a history of a development of GLP-1 receptor agonist. You may remember the first one coming to the market was exenatide to be injected twice a day, and it had rather moderate effects on HbA1c. It was pretty good in reducing body weight. And as I said, it had to be injected several times a day. Then came liraglutide, and now we are talking about those that only have to be injected once a week because they have more favorable pharmacokinetic characteristics. And if we are talking about the best GLP-1 receptor agonists in terms of efficacy, then we can nowadays expect that the reduction in HbA1c, dependent on the baseline HbA1c, is above 1%, sometimes considerably higher than 1%, 1.5%. And I think the best example is if you do head-to-head comparisons to initiating basal insulin, the new potent GLP-1 receptor agonists are better than basal insulin in reducing HbA1c, and they are similar in reducing fasting glucose.
Fantastic. And then a similar sort of question in terms of impact on weight. What sort of weight reduction might we expect with a typical GLP-1? Appreciate we have the exendin-based ones and the GLP-1 analogs, but across the class, what sort of weight reduction might we expect?
There are characteristic differences, and the most effective GLP-1 receptor agonist in inducing weight loss is semaglutide. That's the most recent development. It's another once-weekly injected compound. And with this particular medication, you can expect like 6 kilograms of weight loss in 26 weeks. With the earlier compounds, it's approximately 3 kilograms. But we have to be aware that different from the HbA1c reduction, which is pretty uniform from patient to patient, there are variations, of course, the weight reduction is highly inter-individually variable. So we see patients who do not lose weight, and we have other patients that lose up to 25 kilograms when you initiate this kind of treatment. And probably you need the correct lifestyle in addition to taking the drug in order to fully exploit the potential for weight loss.
And of course, you mentioned so far for a long time, we only had injectable GLP-1s available to us, but we now have an oral GLP-1, oral semaglutide. What's your experience and thoughts on an oral GLP-1, an oral semaglutide?
Well, semaglutide is the only compound that is available now for oral use. And I think the simple way of putting it is when you dose it correctly, you can achieve the pretty similar reductions in glycemia and in body weight. I think the dose they finally chose for marketing is slightly less effective than the injected semaglutide. And you have to use some precautions. So you have to take it as the first thing in the morning, and then you have to wait with eating, drinking, taking medications for at least 30 minutes. Otherwise, the bioavailability, which is low as it is, will be too low to be effective. So that's a must, and patients have a decision. They can decide, do I rather want once a week an injection, or do I prefer the daily procedure that I just outlined?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, Professor Nowak. I think it's great to offer choice because there's no doubt, despite these devices being very easy to use, the fact that GLP-1s were entirely injectable did prove to be a barrier to some of my patients. So having that option now to offer the choice of an oral one, I think has been a great additional tool in our toolbox to tackle type 2 diabetes. So what about the pipeline then? You know, we've talked very much about what we know about GLP-1s, and you alluded a little bit earlier on to GIP, to GIP. And I believe there's a couple of very interesting investigational molecules that are not too far away to being commercially available that me and you might be prescribing in the not too distant future, particularly tirzepatide, which is a dual GIP-GLP-1 receptor agonist, and cotatidide, a dual GLP-1 glucagon receptor agonist. Any insider info about these upcoming classes and how they might fit into current treatment pathways?
Well, talking about tirzepatide, it is developed to stimulate both GIP and GLP-1 receptors. I must say, we don't completely understand the mechanism, but now that the phase 3 program has been published, we are all very much impressed with the effect sizes that you can achieve under various conditions, various stages of type 2 diabetes. And as I said previously, the selective GLP-1 receptor agonists typically reduce HbA1c by 1% or a little more. And in the studies with tirzepatide, it was 2 point something in terms of HbA1c reduction. And body weight, the best you can see in clinical trials with semaglutide is like 6 kilograms. And now we are talking about 12 kilograms. So, and this is not associated with more side effects. So you have a greater efficacy and a similar safety tolerability profile. So we all look forward to having those new medications available.
Great. So that brings us to the end of our conversation, Professor Nowak. Thanks very much for your insights, your knowledge. That's been very helpful conversation. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Endocrinology at www.touchendocrinology.com. Don't forget, there are 2 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.